Fine.
This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This time around, a conversation with State Representative Cedric Hayden joining us from his district office. Thanks for being on this afternoon.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's always a pleasure, Kyle.
So, talk about what the legislature has been doing in the past week.
Okay, so we have gotten through organizational days. That's when we get together and basically start the session. This session, as folks are tuning in, is a virtual session, if you will, meaning that with the exception of Tuesdays at 11 o'clock where the quorum meets in Salem, physically in the building, to move bills up on the reading list. What that means is as legislative concepts or new laws, if you will, get introduced, they have to go through a procedure of being read and first read and second read and whatnot, and then those get disseminated out to the committees. There are 25 committees on the House side, and then there's about the same on the Senate side. I didn't actually count that side. And then those are the individual chambers. There's a House and a Senate, and there's 60 representatives from the House, which is, I'm one of those, representing East Lane County and Northern Douglas County. And then of those 60s, those groupings of districts get combined to create a Senate. So there's 30 senators, and then the those folks represent those people in that area, is what we call their constituents. And so bills come from constituents or advocacy groups or the governor's office or the Oregon Health Authority, wherever they come from. Then those come through our chamber on Tuesdays. We're having those first read, and then the speaker disseminates those out to committees. So that's happening now. We're just starting. I actually today had my first meeting as vice chair of healthcare and vice chair of the COVID committee with the chairs of those prospective committees. And so the lists are starting to fill up of the thousands of several thousand bills that will be going through. Won't move all of those, but that have been introduced. Those are being sent out to these committees. We're starting to schedule those in and then reaching out to groups, advocacy groups, whoever's sponsoring the bill and who's ever requested the bill, have the opportunity to testify on that bill. So that's basically the function of it now, those 25 committees on the House. Those bills are basically categorized by subject and sent to those committees, and then those work through. So in the world today with the virtual, it's more difficult than, you know, showing up in Salem. You got to get online and get in to be able to testify for that. So I'm really encouraging folks that are able to do that on subjects that they're concerned with or want to have input in to be able to get in and sign up and get some testimony on the record.
I don't know if we did this last time we talked, but maybe review what your committee assignments are for this session.
So, yeah, happy to review that. So my background, I'm a dentist by trade, do a few other things, but I was elected in 2014 for the 2015 legislature, so I've served three terms, and I'm going into my fourth term. I serve currently and have the three terms prior to this that I've been there as the vice chair of the healthcare policy on the House, and that's what decides what policies are we going to have in healthcare, and sometimes we monitor what's called scope of practice. That means, you know, one governing board says, no, my practitioners can do this. Another governing board says, well, my practitioners want to do that. And we really stress that we want those governing boards to sort that out, but sometimes it comes to the legislature. So that's an example of a policy thing. So I serve on that committee. been the vice chair through three different chairs now. So there's been some changeover in the chair of that. I also serve on a new committee called the COVID committee, and we're dealing with now going through and having testimonials about The vaccine delivery system, the vaccine itself, the two vaccines that are available, future vaccines that may be coming in, the FDA changing the vial from five vaccines per vial coming in to now they can, if you have the right syringe, you can draw six of those out. So some technical stuff, but basically vaccine delivery system is the main subject in that. So those are policy committees where we make laws and rules that are suggested. And if those have a cost tied to them, then they go to something called Ways and Means. House health policy would go to Ways and Means on Human Services. I also serve on that. And so that's where we get budget numbers. How much are we going to spend? A huge portion of our budget in Oregon, about 40%, is spent on Department of Human Services, which includes things like our foster care system and the Oregon Health Plan and other human services types things. So it's the by far the largest portion of our budget that we spend on that. Other committees that I'm on this time around is I'm on Ways and Means in General Government, and that has some more to do with the function of the agencies and the agencies' budgets and things of that nature. So those are the main committees that I'll be serving on. I am on a few task force going forward into the future. And what I mean by task force are when we have a large policy subject, there's usually a group that is convened that we get together, stakeholders, people that want to have input in that subject and, you know, can discuss that for a year or two before we come up with policy to put it in place as actual something that's adopted or called enacted.
What are you seeing on the state budget numbers in terms of the level of economic hit that the state's coffers are taking due to COVID-19?
So that's been an interesting subject going forward. You know, as we went before COVID, the economy in Oregon, particularly in metropolitan areas, was increasing pretty robustly. We're always trying to work to bring the businesses and help our businesses out in the rural areas that tend to lag behind that due to some of the lack of the natural resources and things that they are able to use to get jobs. So we're always working on that. And then COVID came along, and there were estimates between $2 billion and $4 billion in shortfall in the budget. Now, it's important to understand that the state of Oregon, through the legislative process, spends about $93 billion every 2 years. But if you break that down, somewhere between $20 and $24 billion of those come from state, mostly taxpayers in the state of Oregon. So that's general fund or funds that are generated from the state of Oregon through fees and taxes and things like that. So about $24 billion there. And the rest of it comes from the federal government. And that's assistance in the Department of Human Services. It's assistance how they pay the Medicaid and different programs that the federal government comes. So we spend a lot of money in Oregon. $93 billion is the budget now. The state side of it, the discussion is that going to be at $23 billion? Is that going to be at $20 billion? What they're estimating right now is that we're looking at, rather than being $2 or $4 billion short, it's looking like $1.5 to $2 billion short from what they're expecting. And then there's conversations about the federal government potentially helping come in and cover that gap at about $1.3 billion. We won't really know in a legislative session, like the long session like this, until the May forecast. That's when the number crunchers get together and they do the economic forecast of what they think it's going to be for the next 2 years. The one we work off is not in yet, so we don't have those numbers dialed in yet, but could be anywhere from $500 million to $1.5 billion is really the range that we're looking at right now.
And not only is less money coming in because businesses aren't making as much, so they're not paying as much in taxes, some residents aren't making as much because they've had their hours cut and things like that. But along to go with that, the state has got extra expenses that have been incurred and have happened because of what they need to be doing due to the pandemic.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, we talk about the Department of Human Services or the Medicaid and Medicare's on the federal side, but the Medicaid health plan, the assistance for people getting health care, is increasing significantly under COVID. We were under 25% of Oregonians, you know, just rough numbers. If you got 4 million Oregonians in the state of Oregon, a million of them, we were under a million or 25% of folks utilizing that health program. We're pushing up to 1.4 million people, so the number is coming up significantly on the Medicaid side, and so that alone is pushing the budget, straining the budget. And then you look at, well, look at all the expense for the schools. Look at the expense as, you know, hopefully we can get reopened here. Expense to the small businesses that are having to meet these requirements that we have so that they can open even if it's on a small scale. I don't know if folks saw it, but, you know, the governor is slowly starting to allow some opening of public spaces. What I was looking at just the other day was, you know, up to 6 people in an area. So we're looking at seeing slowly some of our gyms, our personal training and stuff, but they've got to comply with a whole bunch of stuff. And so that's very expensive for those businesses to do it. We've got the decrease, like you said, in the workforce because of that. It's more expensive for our agencies to function, and we're looking at less money. So we're going to have to make, you know, sound decisions on, you know, where the money goes in those buckets. And a lot of that will be determined on federal assistance that comes in and where that comes in. We don't really know what that is yet.
Going to take a break on Inside Douglas County. Back in 1 minute, the interview a podcast after 1 at 541radio.com. State Representative Cedric Hayden with us. And back in a moment on News Radio 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1248, Lars Larson coming at 1, KQEN Local Talk at 4 with Northwest Wine Radio. Brian Calvert talking about wine, beer, and spirits around the Northwest. Tomorrow we talk about human trafficking and related topics with Melody Prummer, the Executive Director of Peace at Home. Also one of her staff joining us as well for a look at human trafficking and related issues on Inside Douglas County. State Representative Cedric Hayden in his district office today. We were talking about the budget. How will this affect the potential budget allocations? I mean, it would seem like every department or most every department is going to be asking for more money, and yet there's less to go around.
Yeah, that's kind of true. And one of the things that we look at when we do those budgets is called current service level. That means, you know, when we do budgets in the state of Oregon, most of the agencies say, well, you know, here's what we spent for the last 2 years, right? Let's say that's just an example for $100,000. Now, of course, the numbers are much bigger than that. But when they come in for the budgets, when we look at the budgets in order to have current service level, if that's a 6%, then to keep them at the same budget, the next biennium, that would be looking at, you know, instead of $100,000, $106,000. So you got that 6%. So all of the budgets that come before the Ways and Means, and, you know, the governor puts her recommendation out there, but it's really in the Ways and Means process in the joint committees of the legislature, Ways and Means, that makes that decision. They look at that current service level, and let's say it's 6% or 10% for a certain agency. What they do is they say, well, if we don't have enough money for that, they start to lower that increase or that current service level. So they might say, well, instead of 6%, that agency, so instead of getting $100,000, we're going to cut that 6% increase back by 3%. And so we'll put in their budget that they're going to get $103,000, for example. Now, you know, folks out there, the agency will say, well, that's a 50% cut of our budget, right? And so they say it just very generically. So when we have budget cuts, it might be a smaller increase in what they had dollar for dollar last year, smaller increase, but not an actual cut to the base or the zero account level of what they have. So it's, I think that's important for folks to understand. When we look at $1.3 billion in a less money, and we're talking $93 billion to have, you know, a couple of percent lower current service level increase can cover that. So it's not necessarily that there's not enough money to spend as much as we had last time. There's just not as much money to spend as we had last time, plus the current service level increases to the amount that the agencies are wanting. I know that's a little confusing, but there's a distinction between the amount of money we spent last time and the amount of money that we spend with increased budgets.
A lot of concern about businesses not making it due to all the COVID-19 restrictions. I mean, we've already seen throughout the state, certainly in your district, number of businesses closed, sometimes for the short term, sometimes for the long term. Especially hard hit have been restaurants and bars. And I know that one of the trade associations arguing that the health data shows they're not responsible for that many cases. Do you feel like any changes should be made on how restaurants and bars are able to operate?
Yeah, I think that we do need to look a little more aggressively at opening. If you look at it, you know, nationwide, Oregon is one of two states that is the most restrictive, depending on who's doing that information. But they're one of two states that are still kind of in the stay-at-home orders. And the governor's is slowly mitigating that very smallly. But, you know, if you look at that, say, okay, so we're one of two of the most restrictive states in the U.S., in America, Northern America here. We're one of two of the most restrictive states, yet our COVID count, you know, we're in the bottom five as far as COVID cases and things like that. So we're doing very well there. And, of course, you know, the agencies and whatnot are saying, well, we're doing that well because we're so restrictive. And others of us are saying, well, we're doing well. People have complied. You know, they're more than hitting the metrics that you wanted them to hit. So we need to dial up this other side where we have businesses able to get back to work. And I know we're going to lose a lot of those restaurants and bars. I know personally some, you know, in the district that I've served, the owners of those just saying, I can't do it. I'm done. I mean, we're not going to be reopening. And those are really the hard stories to hear and listen to, because that's jobs. That's, you know, people, their communities starting to, you know, come apart and not be able to rebuild that back up. And so I would like to see a little more on the dial of let's get things going back to normal. We've got the vaccines coming. For those that want to have that vaccine, it's starting to be available. We're working towards that herd immunity. And at the same time, let's start turning this dial of opening things back up and getting these particularly service industries, bars, restaurants, you know, and all their staff and support that go with that back to work.
I know there have been a few changes that have been allowed along the way. One of them to help out restaurants and bars that have takeout food, et cetera, seems to be a hit is cocktails to go. I have to tell you, I tried a cocktail to go for the first time last night, and it was a big hit at our house because it's not something that we would ever make at home because we don't have the ingredients at home. And but I wonder, you know, taking that, which is set up right now as a short-term situation while we're under this state of emergency, is that something that could be looked at for the long-term as a way to help businesses, restaurants, and bars?
Yeah, I'm sure it will. Now, that was a bill that I supported that came through the legislature, and we talked about it a little bit a while back. It came in one of our special sessions there, and, you know, the concept behind it, dropping the bucket, if you will, but the concept behind it was to try and let these small businesses produce a product that they would normally produce and then safely get that to their customers. And so what we're talking about here is basically, you know, mixed drinks being able to be either delivered or picked up by the consumer or the customer so that they, these small businesses and bars and restaurants and what would have one more avenue to bring in revenue. So we enacted legislation, the legislature enacted legislation for that to happen. As you say, it's a temporary measure only in place as long as we're under the state of emergency. But I'm sure what will happen is that we will look at any data that would be pertinent to that. How did that go? You know, we'll say from a legislative standpoint, how did that go, and look at it kind of as what we call a pilot project. Did it go well? And is this something that we want to open up a full time? So I'm sure that discussion is coming. I haven't identified any bills on that yet, but we're not out of the state of emergency, but I can imagine that will be coming.
What about the State Employment Department? Obviously, they've gotten a lot of criticism since March. Do you feel like things are improving there at all?
No, not nearly enough. This has been a frustration going on 10 months now, and it is something that probably absorbs about 80% of my staff time, if not, and, you know, appropriately so, that my staff are dealing with that with cases, unemployment cases. But I think that is one of our major failings agency-wise for the state of Oregon, not to have better prepared for this type of event or pandemic type of event from a technology standpoint. We had delayed being current on that, and then not accepting or being able to even utilize some of the federal assistance that has come in, or being very delayed in getting that out. And we are still receiving many, many emails, many, many phone calls of people that are still struggling with that. And we're working through that as diligently as we can to help them. We've had a lot of success stories with helping that, but on a one-by-one basis, you know, with advocacy from your state legislature is not the way to have an agency run. We really need to take a serious look at that so it doesn't continue to happen now. It's still a big problem and doesn't happen again in the future.
What about wildfire recovery? There's another place that needs money. What are you hearing about that?
So there has been some money allocated from the emergency board. If I have the, I don't have those figures in front of me, but I think it was $100 million for the wildfire recovery. And there is a wildfire recovery committee. One of the interesting things as we as vice chairs get together and talk amongst ourselves on a routine basis, the wildfire committee is going to be targeting only on the recovery portion of wildfire. And a big topic in there that I'm extremely concerned about is people that have had a house that has burned to the ground that was maybe built in the 40s or 50s or 60s, where, you know, today the land use laws wouldn't allow them to go in and put a new structure. There are some advocacy groups that are saying, no, you have to use current land use laws in order to rebuild that structure. If you couldn't build it currently, we're not going to let you. We don't want you to do that.
Out of time for right now, State Representative Cedric Hayden, thanks for being on this afternoon.
Thank you, sir.
You're listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.